south of the border.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, if you stick around a while, you'll find out. So, let's get started. I mentioned many times before on my show about the lag time that happens between the time when something gets popularized up in the first world and when that same thing or trend establishes itself down here in Latin America. Like, for example, McDonald's, which got its start in the late 50s in the States and got established nationwide throughout the 60s. And by then, its name was as common as Coca-Cola. Well, that phenomena took about 25 years to get down to Latin America, and that's what we call lag time down here. It took till the 80s till everyone knew what McDonald's was all about, which is just a typical example. And nothing against that lag time phenomena, by the way, because that makes up a great part of the phenomena that I call the gringo advantage, which is one of the reasons why gringos and all first world people do so much better in business down here than first world statistics would predict, and why to the Latins, most of us gringos seem as sharp as a tack in business when we're really not. We only seem smarter than the average guy because we saw those trends unfold up in the first world, where we came from. Nothing magical there, but try to convince the Latins of that. So that lag time definitely works in our favor. However, because it's so easy for us first worlders to predict business trends, even downtrends, unfortunately, based on trends that have already unfolded up in the first world, sometimes we get a little melancholy and sad when we see the trends that are coming because they're inevitable. Once they hit the first world, it's just a matter of time before they get down here, and they will, good or bad. And lately, one of the worst trends I've seen in a long time, and it's here to stay, unfortunately, is that Latins are becoming absolutely addicted to artificial sweeteners. I mean, everywhere you look, it's Diet Coke, it's Diet Pepsi, it's Diet Cereal, it's Diet Candy Bars, it's Diet Everything. And you know, we're used to that up in the United States. It's been like that for 30 or 40 years now, ever since the NutraSweet and the saccharin days. That's right. History is repeating itself. Just like in the United States, down here in Latin America, fat people are now walking around with diet sodas and eating diet cereal and diet ice cream and diet yogurt. Yep, the population eats trainloads of that stuff, but they remain fat. Well, I take that back. They don't remain fat. They're actually getting fatter. And one of the things I really can't help but notice in the last 20 or so years I've been down here in Latin America is that the population is really ballooning out. There's so much more obesity down here in Latin America than there was when I first came down here some 20 years ago, that it's almost hard to believe. And here's something interesting. More than 20 years ago, when I first came down to Costa Rica, I couldn't find a jacket, a shirt, or a t-shirt in extra large. Now, it's not that I'm fat at all. I'm 6 foot and 175 pounds, and actually look rather on the thin side. But I do have broad shoulders, so I need an extra large. And back then, I just couldn't find anything in extra large, unless I got it from the first world or went to a PACA, which are used clothes sent down from the first world. But nowadays, some 20 years later, all the stores carry extra large, double X, and triple X, because Latin boys are expanding in all the wrong places. So if waistlines are expanding down here, how do Latin American countries measure up on the worldwide obesity scale? Well, it's like this. Even though Mexico's the only country that consistently pops in and out of the top 10 most obese countries in the world as a percentage of population, I have to think that in the next 3 to 5 years, there's going to be a lot of Latin American countries in that top 10. Because Latins love everything first world, including our bad eating habits. And it's a funny thing, almost all the obesity that you see in Latin America is pretty much confined to the cities. It seems like these days, in the cities now, 80% of all the men and women over 30 have a pot belly or a nice start on one. But out in the countryside, it's a completely different story. Now, if you take a ride through the countryside, you'll see that it's just filled with agricultural workers and no one's sitting on his dead ass or sitting on a tractor. Sure, there are millions of little individual farms, little plots of land and backyard gardens, because every family has its own little plot. And of course, there are corporate farms too. Gigantic sugar, coffee, pineapple, and banana plantations you've all heard about. Because after all, they call these places banana republics now, don't they? But still, 90% of the work is done by hand. I mean, every single guy you see walking down a lone highway in the boonies is carrying his own hand-tooled machete. And he doesn't use that thing to file his nails or clean his teeth. He uses it to cut coconuts, sugar cane, and tobacco. And I'll tell you what, very few of these machete wielders are out of shape. They're skinny, all right, but they're all muscle and no fat. And that goes for the old-timers, too. The ones that are 70, 80, even 90 years old. I mean, these guys really know how to put in a day's work. and it's no 8-hour day for them. It's more like 10 and 12-hour days. Sure, these guys like their beer and their guado when the sun goes down, but it rarely shows on country boys. And by the way, guado is what they call the cheap rot-gut liquor, kind of like moonshine. That's what the lower classes drink because it's dirt cheap. But it's rot-gut, and it definitely makes for a very mean hangover. I've never tried it myself, but expat Eddie has, and that's what he tells me. Anyway, when you're out in the boonies, you don't see fat kids either. The only fat adults and kids you do see out in the boonies are the owners and farm bosses and their kids, the ones that don't do much work but just boss people around all day. And another thing, when you're out in the boonies, you don't see fat, sedentary women either. Even the pregnant ones are putting in a hard day's work, and you often see them carrying bundles of wood or sticks on their head or their back. And that's what they use for firewood because they can't afford propane gas. And if those ladies and kids don't go out into the brush every day and snag some of that firewood, they're just not going to have a hot meal that night. So every day, rain or shine, you see them out there scavenging. And the other thing is, these people who live out in the boonies don't make enough money to buy junk food, as opposed to their poor counterparts in the cities, who actually make a monthly wage, even though it's very low, $200 or $300 a month. Still, in the city, at lunchtime, you see these guys gathered around little kiosks and tiendas on street corners, always with some very cheap sugar water-type Kool-Aid drink, and a bag or two of the dozens of varieties of very cheap junk food, all of it very bad, locally produced clones of the much more expensive brand-name junk food that we're so used to, the stuff that originates in the States, like the Doritos, the Cheetos, the Fritos, the Ranchitos, and all those Eatos that come from the first world that the lower working classes in Latin America can never afford. But they all have their own local affordable brands of junk food, which are much worse than the Eatos that come from the first world, which are horrible in themselves. And just like folks up in the first world, as the locals down here start getting fat, they don't cut back on the junk food. They just start drinking soft drinks with artificial sweeteners. And their favorite thing to do these days is to put Splenda into everything instead of real cane sugar. In fact, I've noticed that even the poorest of people making $200 or $300 a month, when they have a cup of coffee, they dump packages of Splenda in it instead of sugar. And I'm telling you, every restaurant you go into these days, the waiters actually push Splenda on you instead of sugar. And since so many middle class and wealthier people in the cities have a weight problem, Splenda has now become the sweetener of choice for everybody. Even though this is the land of cane sugar, this is where it's all grown. And naturally, as you might figure, since there are so many fat people, diabetes is simply epidemic down here. And I remember 20 years ago when I first came down, it was a rarity. I didn't know anyone with diabetes. And now every family I know has at least one person being treated for it. But I'm talking about city families. When you go out into the countryside, almost no one has diabetes. And if you ask around out in the sticks, most people don't even know what it is. And when you look around, you can see the living proof that it's all about diet and exercise. The people who live out in the sticks all have their driveway chickens and their goats and their tomato patches. And statistics bear out the fact that one or more members of every family that lives in the sticks actually works on a farm. So those people are living right off the earth. They're not going to the store and buying things in cans, loading up on cheap Kool-Aid-like drinks, or eating junk food in general. Not that they wouldn't love to if they could, but it's just not a big part of their lifestyle or their budget. At least up to now it isn't. But when their kids leave the farm for the big city, as so many of them do, that's when so many things change for these kids. Their diet turns to crap, they don't get near as much exercise as they used to, and they lose a lot of personal space because they live so tight and in such small, cramped quarters in the cities. At least that's how the poor, uneducated folks live, and that's the majority of people in Latin America. So when they go back to the farm to visit their skinnier brothers and sisters and parents, it's obvious to everyone that there's a big difference now between those two lifestyles. And the lower middle class folks have a saying down here that roughly translates to, once you leave the farm, you can never come back. And they don't mean because you're more sophisticated and worldly. They mean that if you come back, you just can't cut the work anymore. You'll never again be able to put in a day's work like you used to, because city living turns a person into an out-of-shape slug. And believe me, that's true. I've seen it in action. Oh, and by the way, do you know what the biggest selling junk food of all is down here in Latin America? And it leads the rest by at least 2-1. It's chicharrones. And do you know what those things are? Well, you probably really don't want to know, but I'm going to tell you. Well, after they kill a pig and they're ready to butcher the meat off of them, right under the pig's skin is an 1-2-inch layer of pure white fat. Now, that's not lard that I'm talking about. The lard is what you get when you cook or boil pig meat, and you get that liquid rendered fat that your grandma used to cook with. You remember that? But now, up in the first world, of course, cooking with lard is considered not only very unacceptable, and in fact, up in the first world, cooking with any animal fat is considered terribly unhealthy for a variety of reasons, which I won't go into right now, but I'm sure you know. Well, down here in Latin America, almost every mother, cleaning lady, and live-in maid cooks with that stuff on a daily basis. So let me just warn you right now, if you're invited over to someone's house for dinner, and you've been invited by a local, not a first world person, well, you've got about a 100% chance that you're eating pig lard, even if you keep away from the fried stuff, because guess what? They make their bread, cookies, and pastries with pig lard too. And that, of course, means if you go to any local bakery, anything you buy there is going to have pig lard in it too. I'm not saying exclusively pig lard, of course, because most baking recipes these days call for some kind of vegetable oil. But if you talk to any chefs or cooks down here, they'll tell you that a certain amount of pig lard, which by the way is called manteca in Spanish, manteca, as opposed to mantequilla, which is butter. That's mantequilla, which sounds almost the same as manteca or lard. So don't confuse the two. Anyway, if you're like me and you're totally against eating pig lard and try to avoid it at all costs, not only because it's considered unhealthy for you, but it's pretty disgusting, actually. Anyway, when you've been invited to a local's house for dinner, just try not to think about it, or just ask what they're cooking with. Is it manteca, mantequilla, or margarina? Now, margarina, of course, is margarine, and it actually does sound a lot like margarine, doesn't it? Margarina. And since we're talking about margarine, now is a good time to tell you that the whole society in Latin America is absolutely addicted to margarine. Why? Because it's a cheap substitute for butter. And again, you see it everywhere in the houses of the rich and the poor alike, which is another indication that Latins, even the wealthy educated ones, know pretty much nothing about nutrition. And it seems like these days, the only place you're going to get real butter, if you so desire it, is to buy it yourself or ask for it in a restaurant. Because if you don't, you're gonna get margarine. Now, personally, I'm not into butter, margarine, lard, or any of that kind of stuff. I'm into 100% coconut oil and olive oil. But be that as it may, anytime I go to a restaurant, whether it's expensive or not, I know what I'm getting is lard and margarine in my food. That's just the way it is down here. And personally, I love the taste of butter myself, though I know it'll clog up my heart faster than anything, so I avoid it. But I also know that down here in Latin America, the only times you can be absolutely sure you're going to get butter is when it's sitting in a dish on the table in your restaurant, wrapped in individual packets. You know, those little New Zealand butter pats and the like. But that's only butter to be used for your bread or your rolls. But you can be sure the rest of your food has got margarine and a bit of lard in it. That's a guarantee. And even if you specifically ask the waiter to use olive oil instead, and he says, oh, don't worry, I'll tell the chef, no problem. Well, you just can't believe that either. Because as you know, a lot of food is prepared ahead of time in a restaurant, like sauces and soups and stuff, and no chef or cook's going to start the whole process from scratch just because one finicky gringo asked for olive oil. So even if the waiter or waitress goes along with your request, don't count on it. But back to that most popular junk food in Latin America called chicharrones, which are actually thin sliced peels off the fat of a pig, deep fried in, you guessed it, lard. And the majority of working class people in Latin America are addicted to these things. And when you think about the fact that that's got to be some of the most unhealthy food on the planet for you, and that it's the biggest selling junk food in Latin America, there's a dozen or more brands of this stuff, by the way. Well, simply knowing the volume of this stuff sold, and everybody knows what it's made out of, what that should tell you as a first world gringo is that Latins in general are simply clueless about good health. And to tell you the truth, why they live as long as they do, almost as long as people from the United States, that still baffles me. Which reminds me about the last time I was at the dentist down here, and I asked him about the local population and dental floss. And he told me down here in Latin America, only gringos, dentists, and gays use dental floss. And I know he's absolutely right, because every girlfriend I've ever had down here, and expat Eddie's told me the same thing about all his wives and girlfriends, we've had to show every one of our female friends how to use dental floss. And eventually, the girls do comply and learn to like it, because everyone who uses it does know that your teeth and gums do feel a little bit cleaner afterward. And my dentist down here told me that a long time ago, he quit showing people how to use dental floss, because he said in the end, it's just futile and a waste of time. But he did admit that he tells people to use dental floss, but he doesn't show them how to do it anymore. And by the way, he doesn't know this, but I know the reason why they don't use dental floss down here. It's because dental hygienists don't exist. I told you about that on a previous program. Down here in Latin America, you won't get your teeth cleaned by a dental hygienist. There is no such thing. Not yet. There's a lag time on that, and I guarantee you when it happens, Latin America is going to start flossing. Because after all, that's half of her job. She harps and harps on the flossing and makes you feel guilty if you don't do it. So that part of the dentistry equation just doesn't exist down here. Not yet. Though, once again, I have to say, in those high-volume tourist areas like Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, and all those Latin American places where cruise ships make a stop, as long as there's a lot of gringos and a lot of gringo dollars, there'll be a few dental offices with hygienists, because there'll be a lot of gringo patients and they expect that. So there are a few dental hygienists in those high-volume tourist areas, but I don't know where they're getting trained because there are no dental hygienist schools in Latin America, not yet. Maybe they were trained in the first world, maybe not. Or maybe they're just local women in white uniforms, poking away at your teeth with stainless steel hatchets and picks. Who knows? Anyway, just know that you won't find dental hygienists in 98% of the rest of Latin America. But back to the chicharroni junk food and the fact that 99% of all Latin Americans are not at all health conscious and never read a single label. Though I don't know up in the first world if many people read labels either. But up north, they do have that chain called Whole Foods, and there's a big enough demand for organic food products that up there it's a pretty big industry. But down here in Latin America, there's a huge lag time yet in health foods and organic products. And though they do have the chain GNC in every big city down here and little health food stores, well, the times that I've been in those places, they're never busy, and when you do see people in there, they're either from the very wealthy classes that speak English and travel back and forth to the United States all the time. So, by all appearances, it doesn't look like it's about health at all, but it's about emulating everything first world gringo. And of course, if you do go into a health food store, you're going to see the occasional gringo and expat like me. But you'll never see the middle or lower class people shopping there. The only common Latins you'll see are the workers behind the counter, but they'll never shop there. Things are just way too expensive. Not to mention they're completely ignorant about diet and health. And you can back that up based on the amount of Tang-like sugar Kool-Aid products, mayonnaise, pig lard, margarine, and chicharrones that the average Latin people eat. Oh, yeah, and I did mention on a previous show that up in the United States, people are absolutely addicted to ketchup. Well, down here, in the same way, the average Latin person is addicted to mayonnaise. So everything the average first world American will slather ketchup on, the average Latin American will skip the ketchup and throw a glop of mayonnaise on it. They even slop mayonnaise on hamburgers, hot dogs, steak, and of course they'll load it up on a plain piece of bread too. And Latins just love to put mayonnaise on corn on the cob, if you can handle that. Yuck. Now when I say that Latin Americans are not into the health food craze at all, not yet, there's a big lag time down here, and that they're not into diet and exercise, that's a huge understatement. And it's not that they don't have health clubs and gyms down here. I mean, Gold's Gym and a lot of the first world franchises have already arrived. But down here, having a membership at Gold's Gym, Scandinavian Gym, World's Gym, or a membership at one of the weight loss spas or gyms like Curves, which is specifically for women, which is a U.S. franchise that landed down here too, well, membership at one of those places is not as much about losing weight or getting in shape as it is about belonging to an actual first world style club with an exclusive membership. The kind that wealthier Latin ladies that can afford to go see in all those Hollywood movies. And in pathetic first world reality shows that are shown down here now too, like Jersey Shore and the Kardashians. So the wealthy Latin people with time on their hands, mostly women, go to the health clubs with their bodyguards in tow. They do a little bit of exercise in their designer $300 sweatsuits, alongside the other rich ladies in their competing designer workout outfits. They drink their Gatorade and their health nut bars, and they have a Frappuccino or two at Starbucks, spiked with Splendida artificial sugar. Then they take their kids to Chuck E. Cheese, blow their diets with a sausage pizza, and go home to a big meal cooked by the cleaning lady with mayonnaise, lard, and margarine. Yes, Gertrude, Latin America is just loaded with contradictions. And that's why we first world gringos do so well down here. Because we understand contradictions, because we're filled with them too. I know I am. But right now I'd like to change the subject a bit to currency and currency exchange rates. The topic deserves a bit of discussion, because throughout the 20 countries in Latin America, there are around 17 different currencies, and each one has a different exchange rate against the dollar. Some of them close to parity, that is 1-to-1 against the dollar, and some of them way out of the ballpark, like the Colombian peso, which is closer to the Italian lira than it is to anything else. because it's running around 1,800 pesos to the dollar. But the wildest one is the Paraguayan money, called the Guarani, which is running like 5,000 Guarani to the dollar. That means in Paraguay, a loaf of bread will run around 8,000 to 10,000 Guarani. And down there, it's easy to pay 10 million Guaranis for a new car. Now, the reason why I said there are only about 17 different currencies for all the 20 Latin American countries, that's because three countries, Ecuador, Salvador, and Panama, use the U.S. dollar. All the rest have their own funny money. And in the long run, since they're all losing ground against the U.S. dollar, though they have their spurts of strength like the Brazilian real is having right now. Anyway, like I mentioned in a past show, since they're always losing ground little by little against the U.S. dollar, every Latin American living down here thinks the U.S. dollar is the Rock of Gibraltar. But Latins living in the United States sure know that's not the case. They've watched the U.S. dollar lose 50% of its purchasing power since the year 2000. But Latin Americans living in their own countries down here never realized that. They only see their own currencies getting beat up by inflation. Now, here's something I always find very interesting about the mentality of Latins when it comes to money. Do you remember 15 or 20 years ago that popular TV show with Regis Philbin called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Well, even back then, $1 million was a lot of money, but it wasn't anything near like a million was back in my dad's day. In fact, let's pick 1968. Back then, the average worker's salary in the U.S. was $7,500 a year. So if a guy won $1 million in Vegas, or in the Irish sweepstakes, whatever that was, though I know my dad and his buddies used to play it all the time. But anyway, if a guy in 1968 won $1 million, even if he won that money when he was 21 years old, he could retire in style. Because $1 million back then represented 133 years of the average guy's salary of $7,500 a year. But nowadays, in 2012, the average American up north makes about $42,000 a year. That is, if he still has a job. And that means if he won $1 million today, unless he was a very old guy indeed, he wouldn't be able to retire in style or retire at all, because $1 million today is only about 23 years of his average yearly salary, which means there's been over 500% U.S. dollar inflation since 1968. $1 million is still a whole lot of money, but it's not at all what it used to be. Not up in the good old U.S. of A, it isn't. But down here in Latin America, once again, it's a whole different thing. You know, every Latin American country has its own versions of first world U.S. game shows where they give away a ton of money. Their own versions of Let's Make a Deal and dumbed down versions of Jeopardy, and their own versions of the mother of all Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And most of the big syndicated game shows are coming out of either Argentina, Colombia, or Mexico, because they're the three biggest Spanish-speaking countries. And it always makes me laugh when a country like, for example, Mexico, brag about having TV shows that purport to make their contestants millionaires. Because in that case, it's 1,000,000 pesos. 1,000,000 pesos sounds like a lot, but it's only $78,000, which is really nothing to sneeze at either, except that in all the years these game shows have run, no one's ever won the grand prize. The usual big winners win in the range of 30 or 40,000 pesos, sometimes even 100 or 200,000. But 1,000,000? Nah, never. So in effect, rarely does anyone ever walk away with more than 5 or 10,000 U.S. dollars. But the thing is, the game show host revs up the audience and the contestants so much with the potential that they could win 1,000,000 that these game shows down here are infinitely more popular than any of the equivalents that they copied up in the first world, even though they only pay out on average maybe 5 to 10% of what the U.S. game shows pay out. So you got to wonder, what makes these shows so popular when they pay out like crap? And they really do pay out like crap, believe me. In fact, some of the contestants that win come back week after week to compete against new people. In that way, too, they copy the same format that the first world game shows use, getting a person to come back over and over and over again, building momentum and the audience connection and all that. Well, here's the thing. The reason why they get such huge audience viewership on these things is because to Mexicans, being a millionaire, in pesos, of course, is the dream of every single middle-class Mexican man and woman. The average Mexican thinks he can actually retire on that. But almost no one's ever had the chance to find out because they don't give away 1,000,000. They just say they will in their ads. Now here's another thing that gets your attention. When you're on the street in Mexico and you're in a taxi, let's say, and you're driving through a very nice neighborhood, often the taxi driver will make conversation with you and say, "Man, I'd like to live in this neighborhood. Everyone here is a millionaire." Or you'll hear a guy on the street say, "Boy, I wish I could afford a trip to Disneyland, but I'm not a millionaire." Or my next door neighbor sends his kid to private school, but he's a millionaire. You get my point? They throw the word millionaire around like we used to in the 60s. You see, a Mexican with 1,000,000 pesos to his name is really much admired, and of course there's a little bit of jealousy and envy too, even though 1,000,000 pesos is only $78,000. I mean, often in the United States, a middle-class family has two cars worth more than that. So what I'm saying is a Latin American's perspective on what they consider is rich is completely different from a first-world person's perspective. In most countries down in Latin America, being a millionaire in their currency is the be-all to end-all. To a Venezuelan or a Nicaraguan or Honduran or a Guatemalan or someone from Argentina, a millionaire in their country has got it made. He can retire. Even though to first-worlders and expats, retiring on a million in their currency would be absolutely foolish. For example, if you were a millionaire in Argentina, you'd be worth about a little over $200,000. If you were a millionaire in Bolivia, you'd be worth about $150,000. A millionaire in the Dominican Republic is only worth about $25,000. A millionaire in Nicaragua, worth about $45,000 US. A Guatemalan millionaire, he's worth about $130,000 US. Now, this might sound a little strange, but people on the street in all these countries talk about being a millionaire like it's the be-all to end-all. That if they had a million, they'd have the life of Riley, and they'd certainly retire. And the thing is that in most of these countries, if you had a million in their currency, and you were middle or lower middle class, which means you'd be making anywhere from $200 to $1,000 a month, well, guess what? If you're in that social class, you really would be rich if you had a million cordobas or pesos or quetzales or bolivars or lempiras. Well, in most of those cases, a million in their currency is really big money compared to the average guy's yearly salary. In fact, in many cases, to these guys, it's quite comparable to a North American millionaire. And what makes the whole idea of having a million work for them is that they have a hugely scaled-down lifestyle and much lower expectations right off the bat than a first-world person does. And what local guys would do if they had a million quetzales or lempiras or pesos, they wouldn't run out and buy a BMW, a Ferrari, or a Porsche. No way. They'd more than likely go out and buy a cheap Hyundai or a Toyota pickup truck and maybe even a new house. But there'd be no jacuzzis and swimming pools for them. That's not even on their radar. They'd surely have their sights set on what we'd call a starter home up in the first world. Something more like $60,000 to $75,000. Because you see, way more than half the people down here in Latin America either rent or live with their parents or a family member. And just the idea of owning their own home, no matter how Spartan and small, is pretty much the unobtainable dream for more than half the population down here. And as long as you're not talking about the wealthy, privileged classes, which make up only 1 or 2% of the population, thank God, when talking about the average Latin American on the street, they don't ask for much and their needs are simple. I mean, come on, how do you think they stretch $300 to $500 a month for a family of four? How many North American guys or gals living on their own up in the first world could live on $300 to $500 a month, even on a bet or a dare? Personally, I don't know any gringo who could pull that one off. And if you find one, let me know, because that guy deserves a reality show.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.